And that's one thing for people to watch out for, is if they jump in and try to make the settlement without a lawyer, it can void out the policy. So that's one feature of media liability policy. What we call it is a hammer clause. A hammer clause can, you know, you get involved and the insurance company backs off and they won't come back. It's very important to understand when you buy a media policy, what kind of defense provisions does it have?
That's my guest today, Mike Mansell, an expert in insurance for the publishing industry. Well, we're going to talk at length with Mike in just a moment, but first, let me welcome you to Inside Independent Publishing with IBPA. Thanks so much for streaming in. I'm an independent publisher, and I'm your host, Peter Goodman. Inside Independent Publishing comes to you from IBPA, the Independent Book Publishers Association. IBPA's mission is to lead and serve the independent publishing community through advocacy, education, and tools for success. For more about IBPA and how it can help you be a better publisher and sell more books, whatever kind of publisher you are, go to ibpa-online.org. You can also tweet questions and comments to me at the handles at Peter Goodman or at IBPA. Now let's get started. Mike Mansell is a certified insurance counselor with Aegis Insurance Markets. He is a highly experienced and respected insurance and risk management professional who has been involved in providing expertise to commercial and business clients since 1977. And among his areas of expertise are patent insurance, litigation reimbursement insurance, representations and warranties, climate and weather insurance, claim denial insurance, and more. So whatever mess you or your business might be in, Mike is your guy to ward off all the damages. And one more thing on his resume that's really pertinent to publishing is that he's a practicing law institute faculty member for intellectual property insurance. So welcome, Mike Mansell.
Thanks, Peter. Good to be with you.
Thanks very much for coming by. Now, insurance is obviously a very, very big topic. So today, I hope we can help educate the small indie publisher into some insurance basics. We're not talking about general liability insurance that all businesses ought to have, but really those insurance areas that are kind of specific to publishing. And I'm thinking of intellectual property, copyright issues, disclaimers if you're going to do a martial arts book or a dive book, stuff like that. So when you first talk to an indie publisher, where do you start?
Well, usually, Peter, we find out, you know, where they are and what sort of publishing they do. And as you pointed out with martial arts, that brings some other important coverages into the publisher's media liability insurance policy. In addition to those that you mentioned, you know, of copyright infringement, libel, slander, plagiarism, and stuff like that. Where we get into do-it-yourself self-help publications, we provide what's called contextual liability. That's a big insurance word.
What does that mean?
It means really defective advice or mistake insurance for publishing something where somebody might follow that advice and injure themselves and create some sort of bodily injury or even property damage.
So a publisher has a book that maybe like an exercise book or inviting someone to go out and pick mushrooms or whatever, and has advice on that. This is to kind of guard against things that might happen?
Yeah, somebody picks the wrong mushrooms and become violently ill or something like that, then they would claim that they followed the advice in the publisher's book, and the policy would respond to their damages, their bodily injury, their hospital stay, or whatever it might be.
So now a lawyer might... what would be the difference in this case between what a lawyer advice might be and an insurance advice might be in a situation like that?
Well, the do-it-yourself or self-help books are those that are published usually to try and help somebody to select something. It could be even a roofing sort of a situation where somebody does a self-help or do-it-yourself book on roofing. I don't think that might be a very good idea, but if somebody were to write a book about roofing and the reader were to follow those instructions, and after the roof is done, it collapsed or it leaked or whatever it is, the policy, the media liability policy, would respond to that claim. That claim would be handled by an intellectual property lawyer employed by the insurance company. So they get, I will say that that's one thing I've been very impressed with over the years, and that is the claims handling for media liability with most insurance companies is really spectacular.
So this is kind of interesting then. So a publisher that has insurance like this would not necessarily have to go out and hire their own lawyer if a claim were to occur, that they would expect that would be handled by the insurance company.
Yeah, Peter, you're absolutely right. It's and it's a shame because often, probably more often than not, when a publisher gets involved in a lawsuit, or they're threatened with a lawsuit, or there's some demand made of them legally, often they go to their favorite lawyer, and the claims process starts. And then the lawyer might ask, well, do you have a media liability policy? And eventually, and hopefully, it would get into the hands of the insurance company. And again, I've been doing this, Peter, since I had black hair, and the claims results have absolutely been spectacular. I've only had one really unhappy claimant, but all of the rest of them have been just amazing and very happy with the way the insurance companies deal with it. And that's not always the case with insurance companies. Often we have a very poor opinion. But when it gets into intellectual property law, they really hire some good people to deal with claims.
So it's not the case where you hear like insurance companies want to settle just to avoid the length and expense of litigation, that in the case of these intellectual property suits, that the insurance companies and their lawyers will actually go to bat on behalf of the publishers and of intellectual freedom, say?
Yes, you know, that's another good point, Peter, is that, yes, the insurance company is going to do its very best to settle, and they want to settle as quickly as possible because they're up against another lawyer at, you know, $400 an hour or whatever it might be. So they would much rather settle the claim than go to court. And I know this sounds sort of silly, but most people, when they go to court, are in front of a jury, and most jury participants, if you will, and basically in general, nobody really likes insurance companies. And I understand that. You know, often we hear about claims being denied. And the insurance company is indeed going to do its best to settle the claim and not to go to court. But they do so. I have really been impressed with, again, over many, many years, with the way media claims are handled. There's negotiation with the other attorney, and most of the time they come to reason, and the insurance company settles, often very reasonably, and of course there will be a deductible for the publisher, and it's all taken care of. I've been very impressed with the way it's handled.
Do you think every publisher needs to have liability insurance?
Well, you know, it's sort of like a doctor. We wouldn't really want to go to a doctor unless they had malpractice insurance, even though we are pretty darn sure that our visit to the doctor and the treatment is going to be successful. I suppose if you are publishing poetry or something that's very mundane, or then perhaps it's not necessary. But if there's any risk that there's any, you know, invasion of privacy or copyright or slander, anything along those lines, then it's a good idea to consider it. And really, it's not necessarily very expensive. The bottom of the price range is poetry and children's books, although we have to watch out for the artistic works that are in the children's book. Are they the publishers or are they the authors? Who do they belong to? And then as we get into things like do-it-yourself and self-help books, the price goes up a little bit more. And the top of the line is any sort of investigative work where publishers are publishing books about investigative issues. Those premiums get to be very high or very expensive.
And so when an insurance company is evaluating a company, they will look at what kind of books they do and all the other details of their business to try and assess how much of a risk there is. Is it a scientific calculation in any way?
You know that there's so many features that go into the pricing for a publisher's liability or media liability policy, one of which is revenue. You know, the insurance companies often feel that the more you publish, the greater your revenue, the greater the risk. And often I will argue with them and say, well, look, you know, practice makes perfect. And if they're publishing a lot of books and they're making a lot of money, maybe there's less chance of a claim. But they don't listen to me that often. But seriously, it's the type of books that are being published, the experience of the publisher, the number of titles, the types of titles. All of those ingredients, if you will, go into the pricing.
What might be a typical pricing range? Is it like as low as $1,000, as high as $10,000?
The price range, again, is dependent on the types of books and all that kind of stuff, the revenue gained and so on. But a typical policy for something that's modest, it's pretty, you know, passive, it's not provocative sort of material. Yes, we see prices go down as low as, I would say, $1,200 to $1,500 for a year. And they go all the way up into the $75,000, $100,000 range, depending on the type of publishing. So, but most of them, I would think the average premium for a media liability policy is about, say, $35 to $4,500.
Okay, and that would generally be on top of their general business liability insurance, is that right?
Yes, the business liability or general liability insurance is a completely separate policy that's generally handled by their own local insurance broker. And then if they realize the need for media liability or they're publishing works that might cause liability claims, media liability claims, then they would come to somebody who specializes.
Right. So so most people who might have, I'm just throwing out State Farm as a name because I don't really know, but a lot of people might have their business liability through State Farm. And then if they say, well, do you have publisher's liability? State Farm or Hartford or, I don't know, Aetna, some of these other local people might say, well, no, we don't have this. You have to go someplace else. And so people end up actually finding a specific, like a whole separate insurance company to deal with the their publishing exposures.
That's correct, Peter. The often the agent, the State Farm agent or the local agent with whom they deal for their business insurance, perhaps their home insurance or automobile insurance, don't really know what media liability is. It's sort of a strange duck, if you will. And often they will come to me. Now, there's one sort of caveat that I'd like to share on that, and that is often those agents, the home agent, the business insurance agent, will try to find media liability insurance. And unfortunately, and only too often, do they find a media insurance policy that is offered and issued on what we call a claims-made basis. Now, I realize that's a technical a term, but it's something to be avoided at all costs, and it's unnecessary to buy a claims-made policy unless you're publishing something that's very, very dangerous.
What does that mean exactly?
The claims-made policy is a very restrictive policy that goes from year to year to year, and what it does is it shortens, if necessary, or eliminates, if necessary, the insurance company's responsibility after 1 year. They'll give you 1 year, and if there are any claims, if it's something that's, you know, hazardous or something like that, They can get off the policy if it's something moderate and the claims made policy isn't that bad. But what the publisher should be looking for is what we call an occurrence-based policy. A general liability policy is an occurrence-based policy. So it to be avoided, and this is really something that publishers should be aware of, to avoid claims made and buy occurrence form policies.
Great. Well, that is great advice. And those are standard industry terms, occurrence-based versus claims-based?
They are indeed. If somebody calls their agent and says, you know, what is the claims-made policy? The agent should be able to explain what that is. And again, if something could be avoided unless there's no other choice.
Right, right. So when a publisher is, you know, thinking about this, are any kinds of organizations safer? That is, it's better to be a corporation, you know, that expression, you pierce the corporate veil, and some people think they're more protective, they're a corporation. Is that, from an insurance standpoint, is that true, or does it not make much difference?
No, the underwriters have no real preference. I would say the majority of applications that we see now are LLCs, and as you know, and if you go to the internet and look up, you know, whether an LLC can be penetrated easily, and the answer is yes. It's sort of the same thing as a corporation. There is some protection, but it's not an ironclad protection. So we see, you know, corporations, we see partnerships, although we don't see many partnerships anymore. I would say the majority of our applicants are either corporations or LLCs, but we'll take a sole proprietor, no problem at all.
Great. And what are the most frequent things that have been problematic for publishers in recent years? Is it intellectual property, or, you know, yoga and bending your leg the wrong way? What?
Good one, Peter. We see a variety of claims. Interestingly enough, we don't really see that many, but there is a variety of the ones that we do see, a variety of different claims, and the majority of claims, interestingly enough, come from copyright infringement, where somebody's copying somebody else's material inadvertently, hopefully, and we see that quite often. And then what we call contextual liability or defective advice, we see those periodically where somebody uses somebody's remedy for something and it doesn't work. But yes, where some publisher has published a do-it-yourself book, we do see a fair amount of those claims. But copyright still is the leading source of claim. Copying somebody's work without doing due diligence, not checking to make certain that it's within the time frames of the copyright law and so on. And that's the predominant claim.
And I suppose sometimes if you've got a good lawyer, violations of violations, there's not much they can do, I suppose, except maybe come to a reasonable settlement with the plaintiff.
Yes, and you know, that's what we hope for. And that's why a media liability lawyer or intellectual property lawyer is really, even though they're expensive, and one of the most expensive types of lawyer, they really know their business. And we find that quite often when we have a claim, our insurance company lawyers talk to the offended lawyer, if you will, and they come to an agreement. It's done quietly and in a genteel fashion. And it doesn't go to court. And usually it's worked out well.
And presumably the publisher is involved in, I mean, they have to approve the settlements.
Yes, they do. And that's one thing for people to watch out for is, you know, if they jump in and try to make the settlement without a lawyer, it can void out the policy. So that's one feature of media liability policy. We call it is a hammer clause. And a hammer clause can, you know, you get involved and the insurance company backs off and they won't come back. So it's very important to understand when you buy a media policy, does it, what kind of defense provisions does it have?
Wow. Well, Mike, you've given us a ton to think about, and I'm sure we've really only scratched the surface, but if nothing else, I hope we've been able to persuade a lot of listeners who are publishers to look at what they're doing and assess whether they need to go the next step and get publishing liability insurance. And if they do, don't forget, we've been talking with Mike Mansell, and he may be the person to help you with your needs. Mike is an IBPA member vendor, you should know that, and he's very easy to reach. You can reach him at his email, which is Mike, M-I-K-E, at aegisins.com, also at https://. AegisInsuranceMarkets.com. That's all one word. Or, to make things even simpler, he's said it's okay if you give him a call. So his phone number is 925-899-5845. If you didn't get that detail here, check the notes to the podcast, and I'll be sure to include it there. So once again, I'd like to thank Mike Mansell for talking to us about publisher's liability insurance. Thank you very much, Mike. Really appreciate it. Great information.
Peter, good to be with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Right around the time I did this interview with Mike, I happened to read a very harsh assessment of whether you should just go ahead and quote song lyrics in your book. The article was by a guy named Scott McCormick, and it was on the Book Baby blog, if you want to try and track it down. The article was notable because, unlike most in this genre, it was pretty fun, you know, very harsh but spicy. I'll put a link to the article in the podcast notes, but what I want to say now is that all this talk about insurance and litigation, sometimes from our perspective, it represents an obstacle to our free expression. It would be really great to pull the perfect lyric from a song that perfectly sums up the character's state of mind, as so often song lyrics do in real life. And but, you know, not being able to do so well, it kind of forces us to find another way of expressing that same thought, something original, something never written down before in just that way. So, you know, maybe our inability to just grab what we like, how we like, whatever we like, isn't such a bad thing. Forced to come up with innovative ways of stringing together fresh new words, maybe we also come up with fresh new insights, too. And in this way, our culture advances, it grows, it evolves, and it improves. And, you know, think of it also from the creator's perspective. Maybe you're the creator. Would you want people just taking stuff without crediting you and paying you your fair compensation? After all, you didn't just produce your work by snapping your fingers and willing it into existence. It represents many hours of work and a lifetime of insight. Why shouldn't creators get paid for what they do? If they don't, how many artists will still bother to put their work in a form that we can all access and get pleasure from, like books and recording? Information wants to be free, said some techno-wizard zillionaire without a trace of irony. A lot of the internet is based on giving stuff away, but all that YouTube stuff is filled with ads, clickbait, hidden agendas, and hidden persuaders. You wonder if the point is to inform or just, as Steve Jobs put it to John Sculley, sell more sugar water. But since you never know when you might inadvertently transgress, you better make sure you've got some good insurance, just in case. Now, to comment on this podcast, tweet to me using the handle @PeterGoodman or @IBPA. Just a reminder, if you're already a member of IBPA, we really appreciate your support. Be sure to let us hear from you. If you'd like to learn more about IBPA or are considering joining, check out the IBPA website at ibpa-online.org. Well, thanks for listening again to Inside Independent Publishing. Keep your nose in that book. And as my bosses in Japan used to say, let's have publishing fun.